Bon dia, brothers and sisters. I was colonized by Britain, so I speak English. You were colonized by the Portuguese, so you speak Portuguese. And now South Africans, you share the same history with us. My apologies to the interpreters. I tend to speak fast in English. So if you can't hear me and if there's problems with translation, please raise your hand so I'll speak slowly. We are under time pressure and we are also under language pressure. And we are also under the pressure of facing this climate crisis. I'm happy to see the government officials here. I'm sure we have crossed the corridors in many of the meetings. So I'm happy to be in your country. This is the first time I am in Mozambique. And I'm looking very much to your cashew nuts. Now, Dipti told me to speak about the planetary crisis. So I have a presentation here, which I hope you can see at the back. Now, a lot of words here, but don't pay attention to the words because I will come to pictures. Now, what is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change? What is this IPCC? Now, the IPCC is a body of, large body of the scientific community who, together with governments, are actually advising the governments. Because there are people in the world who believe that climate change is not happening. That what is happening is actually natural. So this is not happening. So there are many of them who put their head in the sand and behave like an ostrich. Unlike the ostrich, they are bad people. The ostrich is good, but not these people who particularly come from the fossil industry. And we will come to more of that later. But what is this animal called? Global warming. Now, just to make sure that everybody is on the same page, we talk about greenhouse gases. And why do we call them greenhouse gases? This is actually a Western word, greenhouse, because for those of us who live in the tropics, we don't know what is a greenhouse. A greenhouse in the north is where even in winter, you would build a glass house and you would plant your vegetables and you would trap the heat to keep it warm, because they live in cold climates. And of course, in the south also you have the cold climates, but somehow I always think of the north as having winter and not the south. The point is, this greenhouse is to warm the temperature so that you trap the heat. Now, the greenhouse gases which come from the fossil industry emits gases and they trap the heat and they warm the world. And that's what's greenhouse, that's why it's called the greenhouse effect. So the world is getting hot and the world is also getting cold. There are also two things. So when you talk of climate change, it's not just about warming, it's also about cooling. I think we need to remember these two. So what the IPCC, this body of scientists who have recently released what they call the fifth assessment report. And they have said, these are some of the messages from there, that the evidence of climate change is unequivocal. Now, what does that mean? In simple English, that means it is happening. You cannot question. So to question is like questioning the Bible, or questioning Islam, or questioning the Hindu faith. So it is happening. You cannot deny. And human influence is extremely likely to be the dominant cause. So those of people who are saying this is natural, you know, it's the divine interference, that's not true. So there is evidence. The impacts on food production, extreme weather, impact on health, and we will see that. But what they also say is that we are on track for a 4.8 to a 7.8 degree of warming by 2100, not far away, yeah? And as much as 2 degrees could be very dangerous. Now many of our governments, now you heard the government official, at the climate negotiations they talk about 2 degrees C. That gives a 66% chance of a 2 degree world. They say 66% chance of a 2 degree world. But many of us are saying, particularly from civil society and social movements, and even the small islands and in much of Africa, that 2 degrees is too high. You should actually aim for 1.5 degrees centigrade. And now the whatever governments have committed to so far, which I'll talk more this afternoon, are not going to take us to a 2 degree world. They are going to take us beyond 2 degrees. So what governments, particularly in the north, are doing is very, 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 very little, particularly given their historical responsibility. Because these countries have gotten rich by emitting fossils in the atmosphere, I mean by using the fossil economy, becoming rich, becoming fat. Now fat is nice, but I mean I use fat, I myself am a bit on the fat side. It's not a judgment, which is bad, yeah? But when I'm saying fat, these are the people who think they need to be, actually they need to be much slimmer, yeah, for their own health. Now, what we are very clear about is that we need to do a change in the world. We have to transform. Let me go to the next one. We'll talk more about that. Now, the impacts are happening now. Now, the rainfall patterns, melting snow, glaciers are being affected. Now, for those of you who don't know, remember Mount Kilimanjaro? I did not bring the pictures. In fact, I saw that the snow melt in Mount Kilimanjaro, the amount of snow is decreasing, and you can actually see it on satellite imagery of how the snow is fastly disappearing. When that disappears, what it means is water is affected. So higher temperatures have a widespread negative impacts on crop, we all know that. And the people who are most threatened will be the poor. The rich can go anywhere. They can even go to the moon. But where are we, the poor, who are going to go? Now this is a picture from the IPCC about the climate impacts. Widespread impacts attributed to climate change. You may not be able to see, but don't worry. This will be sent to you. All of you, it will be made available. But this is just to give you a snapshot that no continent is safe. Yeah, everywhere there will be impact in terms of food production, livelihoods. In the north and then in the southernmost atmosphere, you have glaciers and melt and permafrost thawing. And you do have rivers and lakes and drought and coastal erosion and sea level rise. So this is what they have already begun to map. Now what we understand is that much of this is actually not even known, because many of the studies from developing countries are not even there. And this is what is frightening. In many of our countries, we don't have the capacity to show what is actually happening on the ground. If you go and ask, your communities may know, your communities who are farming, who will begin to say, now I find something different happening. That if I used to plant my crop on this time, in the past I used to have rainfalls this time, but now I see a change. That means the climate is already changing, and many of us have to begin to pay attention to these things and begin to document them. Because it's very, very key. The next slide, please. And if you can make it slightly bigger, I don't know whether you can. But this is just to show, never mind. It is just a snapshot to show that many parts of Africa, if you could go to the details, like in the south and southwest, what's quite clear is that you will see the problem of precipitation decreasing. That means rainfalls decreasing. And when you have rainfalls decreasing, what does that mean? It is a huge water issue. So water is important. Health impacts are also being seen. And so you can take a closer look later in terms of that. I apologize. There's so many of you, this is so far away, and to get all this image in one is difficult. But in Africa, what's quite clear is that this is what the IPCC report says. Land regions across Africa have warmed, and the future impacts are going to be substantial. And the mean annual temperature is likely to exceed 2 degrees centigrade already. And the precipitation is likely to reduce over northern Africa and southwestern parts of South Africa by the end of the 21st century. Climate change will amplify existing stress on water availability. Climate change will interact to exacerbate agricultural systems' vulnerability. This is food. Your food will be impacted. Climate change will increase the burden of climate-related health outcomes. For instance, they're talking about increase in malaria, for instance, waterborne diseases will also be affected. Now, what they're already saying is that in Africa, the kinds of policies and frameworks that are there will not be able to cope with the cope with adaptation initiatives. So this is actually something that is very serious. Now, do you know where this is? Who can guess?
Mozambique.
Yeah. I don't know whether these floods are related to climate change, but definitely if you can see that there are much more of these events happening in our parts of the world, very, very frequently, large storms suddenly just falling, and then the existing infrastructure unable to cope anymore. And so this might be one scene that will be much more common. Next, please. Drought in Africa. Something that you would see images. Now, I was shocked by this picture. I'm not saying that this is due to climate change, but who can say no? Yeah? So this is the problem, where you see this is what the... When you put those words into actual pictures, it's scary. And this is what can happen. This we know, farming, and the communities who are really dependent on water and rainfall. And this is where we were talking about. How are you going to feed people? Next, please. Water, and that many communities don't have tap water, but they have to rely on these kinds of little streams, and this would be an impact. Women who are particularly burdened, who have to go miles and miles to collect water. Yeah, the men can sit in the house, yeah, and have a good time. I'm kidding. I'm just trying to joke a little bit. But yeah, okay. But inject a little clarity in a gender perspective, where women will be overburdened because they will have to move faster, even in collecting fuel, the firewood and so on. They'll have to go further and further to find fuel. Traditional fuels. Now this, the projected warming in Africa, this is one scenario that the IPCC has put. The top one is the one which exceeds 2 degrees and goes to a 4 to 5 degree world, and you can see the redder it is, the more hotter it is. So you can see if that is how the emissions trajectory will go, then you will have a very, very hot Africa. The second scenario is a 2-degree world, which is still showing that temperatures will be rather high. But in any case, this is a better scenario. The one at the bottom is better than the top. So that's living below 2 degrees and 1.5, and that is overshooting. So 2 degrees is not safe. For instance, forests are even more sensitive to climate change than previously thought. Local temperature increases of even 1 degree C or more above pre-industrial levels are projected to negatively impact yields of wheat, rice, and maize. Now, the Indo-Gangetic Plain, that is where my part of the world comes from in Asia, half of the wheat growing area could be significantly stressed by the 2050s. That's where huge populations live, and you can imagine what will happen. And price rises, which may be induced by climate shocks, have a disproportionate impact on the welfare of the poor in rural areas, such as female-headed households. This was also from the IPCC in parts of the report. Next, please. So more hunger, more poverty. This is what they're predicting. It is virtually certain that there will be more frequent hot and fewer cold temperature extremes, and that it is very likely that heat waves will occur with high frequency and duration. Even if we manage to reduce our emissions in line with the 2 degree C or a 1.5 C objective, glacier volume is projected to decrease by 15 to 55%. with huge consequences for drinking water. Poverty reduction will be more difficult, further erode food security and prolong the poverty trap. Next, please. Now, what the IPCC also does say is that we do need to set a limit on pollution, okay, emissions. This is a nice cartoon. Right, now we clean up. Now you can see the north, which is much fatter, and the south, and you can see that there is an equity dimension to this as well. Yeah, who is going to pay the price? And this is really the big debate. Now the IPCC report reveals that, and just to cut the long story, because there is a limited carbon space, you know, the carbon, the atmosphere, we can't keep emitting all the time. There is a limit. And what they're saying is that between 1750 and 2011, the cumulative carbon dioxide emissions in the atmosphere was already about 2040 gigatons. Yeah? And 1 giga equals 1 billion tons, so large amounts already there. And 40% of these emissions have remained in the atmosphere. The rest was stored in plants and soils on land. And a lot of it also has gone into the ocean. And this is what the latest findings have surprised scientists, that much of the ocean has been absorbing the gases. So the ocean is warming. Can you imagine the impact? We can't see what's happening down there. But 30% of the CO2, the carbon dioxide, is already causing acidification of the sea, which will then affect marine life, which will then affect fish. I hear that Mozambique is very famous for your seafood. Now this is a problem. And what we also know is that the IPCC says that for total CO2 emissions since 1870, you have to remain for a 2-degree world, you want to limit to 2 degrees, you need to remain below 2,900 gigatons. Yeah? But the worst part of it is that we have already emitted, by 2011, 1,900 gigatons. Which means you have 1,000 gigatons of CO2 to emit from now to the future, which means you have in 20 to 25 years, only 20 to 25 years, if the current rate of emissions continue, the ability of the Earth to absorb the gases and limit to below 2 degrees would be exhausted. And this is a 2-degree world. If you take 1.5, you don't have 20 to 25 years. That's a luxury. Yeah? So this is how dramatic it is and how we have to get emissions really down as fast as possible. Now the importance of justice. Yeah? The carbon cake. Somebody has eaten. You have a limited cake. They have eaten all the cake. And this little cake is left for the South. And the South has to share it with the rest of the world. The population. Our population is like 70% of the world or even 80% of the world. And theirs is only 20% and less. Yeah? So we have to share the rest with all that. While they have taken everything and they've grown wealthy. Okay? So they both mitigation. Mitigation basically means you have to reduce emissions. But in the LDC countries, of which Mozambique is, your emissions are 0.1 something of the world. Very, very low. So you should be going towards avoiding emissions so that you don't follow the same model of the north. Don't repeat the same patterns. So you should be avoiding emissions. But how do you avoid emissions? You can't just do that overnight. You need the money, you need the technology, you need the right kind of solutions that don't repeat the false solutions of the North, which I'm sure Bobby will talk about more. And so equity, justice, and fairness have implications for sustainable development and poverty eradication. Many of our Northern scientists or Northern friends only talk about, you know, emission reductions, everybody has to reduce, but they don't talk about equity or justice. For us in the developing world, this is very key. Next, please. So, share the remaining carbon space. Now, if you look, emissions, we have to have a fair shares approach. And here you see, this is Mr. USA. Yeah, talking about a fair share. Already having consumed so much, they want to take more. It's not just the USA. The developed world has taken so much of our carbon space that in civil society and social movements, we actually say that they have to repay the carbon debt. They have to cut dramatically down. They cannot be emitting any more. It's like Israel and Palestine. Yeah? If you have the Israelis continuing to expand their settlements, the Palestinians don't have a home. So how do you make sure the Israelis have to cut back on their occupation and let the Palestinians to come back? So you're in that limited space. You do need to share it in a way that is fair and which also reflects historical responsibility. But this approach is not be taken forward in the climate negotiations. We can talk more later in the afternoon about that. Next, please. So I think I will leave some of this to how much of fossil fuels and so on to Bobby. But what's important is that 1.3 billion people worldwide do not have access to electricity. Particularly, this is the developing world. 3 billion people, yeah? 1.3 billion don't have any access. And 3 billion are dependent on traditional solid fuels for cooking and heating with severe health effects and impact and also on the ecosystems. So the decarbonizing of electricity generation is an important strategy. What is the meaning of decarbonization? Meaning you don't depend on emitting. Yeah, you have to find different solutions, particularly to meet energy access in the developing world to the people who need the energy the most. And sometimes if you look at who is, you know, whenever when many of our in our governments, even in Malaysia where I come from, they say we need more energy, and we say, who is needing this energy? You find that the energy going to the 1% at the top. The bulk of the people in the south don't have, below that, don't have any access to energy. So in one case that I come from, they've built a huge dam displacing about 10,000 indigenous peoples. And that dam, after causing so much of problems, is now generating too much of electricity, not for the poor. So they say, where are we going to sell this electricity? They're bringing in dirty aluminium smelters to suck up that energy. So the poor are going to continue to suffer because these energy systems that some of our governments talk about are feeding the rich, not the poor. And that has to change. I wanted to show this picture. Children who don't have energy, who have to depend in this kind of need, at least they have something. Yeah, but this is not sustainable for our people. Next. So there are also false solutions that are being promoted. I know Nemo Bassi will talk more about that. So in the Western world, many of them who are very having their consumer lifestyles, the 1% of the North, I already enjoying where there is also tremendous inequality in the North. What you find that many of that, particularly those who belong to the Republican Party, yeah, the Tea Party and so on, what they do actually is they actually say that first they deny climate change. Second, they say if at all we need to address, we have to go for technology like geoengineering. We don't change lifestyle. We continue to be as greedy as we want, live the luxury that we want, but we begin to tamper with the atmosphere by, you know, they want to change geoengineering, like one example, they want to shoot some pellets in the sky to absorb whatever that's there. Can you imagine they want to geoengineer the world? This is another crazy idea. This is no longer science fiction. There's a huge lobby industry, which lobbies, they even lobbied the IPCC. Next, please. Of course, nuclear. We all know, many of our governments, nuclear doesn't emit carbon. Many of our governments are pushing nuclear, and many of us are fighting against that, because this is not a solution. What we saw, Fukushima, if we all remember. And so that's another issue. So we will come to that. This is in the UN, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. You know, another summit. Will it deliver? Now that's a question we need to answer in the afternoon. Skip that. Now, guess which country is delaying climate action? Who are the culprits? I did mention. I put the United States always at the top because this is the biggest historical emitter. And it is not willing to take on binding targets. And we'll talk more about that in the afternoon. equity. Now this is another nice picture. It says, what the hell is wrong with you people? Row, row, you want us all to drown? This is all being in the same boat. Yeah? And you have the rich telling that they are sitting up there and say, you row, row and row, but all of us will sink together. This is one thing why this is not a local or a national solution. It's a global problem. You need everybody to cooperate. Next, please. And again, rich countries and poor countries. Here, the cartoon on the left says, it's important that we make plans to adapt to climate change. The rich countries are telling the poor countries. So the poor countries, they've got no choice but to go there, but these rich countries build up their walls. You cannot come in. Yeah? So this is another problem. And then this is very interesting because this one particular cartoon says, climate change threatens our existence, and the entire audience is sleeping. Nobody's paying attention. But the minute you say, climate change threatens our economy, everybody wakes up. But this is real. Climate change is affecting the economy, and it will. And so this is why it's no longer just an environmental issue. It's a development issue. It's a economic issue. How we transform is important. Next. So you have, this slide also talks about equity in this way. Survival emissions versus luxury emissions. Whose emissions is this? So we need to also look at that. Is the poor the ones who are emitting, or is it the rich with their luxury cars? Now that is another important issue. The consumption side. Next, please. And so I won't go this. I wanted to go to skip. Go to the next one. So we have an option. One option is, this slide shows these people are swimming and they're going towards that island, and there's a ship or an ark right at the top. So one fellow is saying on this side, hey friend, you guys, are you expecting a repeat of the biblical flood? Remember Noah's Ark? Yeah? So then the other guy is saying, no, just preparing for the sea level rise. Yeah? Because this is an impact. A funny cartoon, but with deep implications. So either we go this route, or, next please, we march, we try, we mobilize. And for Friends of the Earth, we talk about mobilization, resistance and transformation. And this is the People's March in New York, the biggest climate change march ever seen in September. And some of us had the good fortune of being in that march. But did this move governments, particularly in the United States? Not very much. But this is what we need to keep doing. So next slide, please. So we can build a future. Now that's the ending I want to say. I painted the gloom and doom and die and, you know, horror. But that is the scenario ahead of us. But we can change. We have to have hope. And we can build the future. And that future can only happen if we all stand up and rise in our own countries, work with our governments. Or if our governments don't work with us, change our governments. I'm not inciting. I'm not saying anything and whatever. But governments have to listen to people. Like the United States and in Europe and so on. They keep not listening to their people. Talk about democracy. What is democracy? People don't listen to their citizens. I mean, the governments don't listen. So unless there is people power, power is not going to change. So that's the message I wanted to give at the end. So let's move, and we can build a better future. And I'm sure, and I wanted to end with obrigado.